being the best version of yourself isn't always easy. And Kate Volman knows that it's not a task to undertake by yourself.
Humans, we are here to grow, to get better, to develop, to become the best version of ourselves. And the only way to do that is to surround ourselves with really great people and interesting people, people that are doing things out in the world that you are fascinated by. I always tell people, like, what are you curious about? What are you fascinated about? If you are curious about something, whether it's a creative pursuit or a career or anything, someone else has already done it, and we get to learn from those people.
Curiosity and learning. Kate managed to hit on two of our favorite topics here on Timeless Leadership. But there's much more than that, as the conversation with Kate Volman continues. This is Timeless Leadership, where we explore the values and principles that drive extraordinary leaders. We look for the timeless virtues that are just as relevant in the 21st century as they were in the first century. Universal truths that will help make us better versions of ourselves. Hi, welcome back to Timeless Leadership. I'm Scott Monty, former executive at Ford Motor Company and now an executive coach and speaker. I'm so glad you're investing time in yourself to learn some timeless lessons today. Now, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast here wherever you listen and to the Timeless and Timely newsletter on Substack. Links are right here in the show notes. For our premium subscribers, we have additional features such as the ability to comment on every entry, monthly leadership Q&As where you get to ask me questions and I answer with leadership advice or business advice, whatever you happen to need. Occasional bonus material from the podcast, conversations that kept continuing after the regular episode concluded. You get a fortnightly off-the-clock newsletter, which is a fun look at words and history for all of you word nerds out there. And you get access to our entire archive of material going back some 4 years, plenty of leadership and communication advice to search through. So I hope you'll join us as a subscriber on Timeless and Timely. You've heard the advice to do what you love. It's a cliche at this point. And the cynical side of us dismisses the concept. Too few people are able to connect what they love with something financially rewarding. But instead of trying to turn your passion into your job, what if you discover and embrace your passions and use them to simply bring yourself joy, boost your mood, and still maintain your career trajectory? That's the premise behind Kate Volman's book, Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. Kate Volman is a multi-passionate leader, fitness enthusiast, podcaster, content creator, book lover, and author. With over 20 years of experience in developing and leading life-changing programs for entrepreneurs and leaders, she has a passion for helping people grow. In addition to serving on the leadership team for multiple organizations throughout her career, she's also used her entrepreneurial skills to start and run a boutique marketing firm. Her enthusiasm and passion for helping people explore their creativity, both personally and professionally, make her a sought-after speaker, trainer, and executive coach. As the CEO of Floyd Consulting, she leverages her knowledge and experience in personal development and company culture to help people live more fulfilling lives. Kate is the host of two podcasts, Create for No Reason and Lead with Culture. And she's the author of Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. Kate Volman, welcome to Timeless Leadership.
Scott, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to have a fun chat with you, as always.
Oh, you know, the great thing about you, Kate, is even though we're doing this audio only, it goes out as an audio feed, we're recording on an audio only platform, so I can't see your face, I can still feel that smile coming through.
Oh, well, thank you. That is awesome. We can all use a little more smiles in the world.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think you do a great job of helping people understand, you know, the optimism, the happiness, the things they ought to look forward to. So by way of introduction, what makes you happy, Kate?
Ooh, what makes me happy? Oh, it's so interesting because I feel like there's so much data and science around happiness and what makes people happy. And you can kind of go down the rabbit hole of like, what does that even mean? And how do I even answer a question like that? So it's funny that's where we're starting. But I think like a lot of people, happiness is, it's always the littlest things, right? It's really being with family, doing work that I really appreciate and feel like I'm able to use my gifts, and just living in as much gratitude as I can. And it's a reminder every day. I just have to remind myself of how lucky I really am to be where I am, to get to experience what I have and really just find a lot of joy in every day, because there is so much going on with comparison and what we don't have. And so really trying to live a life where I focus so much on the gifts that I do have, the family that I have, the health that I'm so blessed to have, and just living every day with as much gratitude as I can.
That's really wonderful. And I think it's a powerful reminder that it isn't necessarily the big things. It really is the little things that matter to us. If we take the time, and that's the thing, we seem so driven, so distracted by so many of these things that it's difficult to break away and truly appreciate and express gratitude, as you've just said. I want to explore with you your journey, because we want to talk about your book, which is Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. But before we get to the book and some of the lessons that people can take from it, talk us through your career progression and how you got to where you are today, how you discovered what it is that you love.
Well, I feel so blessed for my career path. You know, I think when we're starting out in our career, we don't really, I don't know, we just kind of are. I know for me, what happened was I was just looking for a job, right? I was getting out of college. I needed to find something. I wasn't really being super strategic in where I was going to end up. And for me, after I started at an advertising agency, but I was only there for a short time. And then my second job out of college was at a chamber of commerce. And at the time, Scott, I didn't even know what a chamber of commerce was. I was like, what is this thing? But a friend of mine was working at a chamber of commerce in her city. And so I reached out to them and I ended up getting this job at the chamber. And that completely changed the trajectory of my whole world, because at the chamber, that's where I met so many incredible people. I learned about entrepreneurship and advocacy and community and philanthropy. I learned about business. And from working with so many entrepreneurs and really incredibly smart people, I got to gain a lot of skills, and it opened my eyes to things that I really didn't see. You know, my parents, they just kind of worked like a typical job. And my dad worked for the same company for 41 years, which is like unheard of. And so for me, I met all these really incredible entrepreneurs and people. And so that really helped guide me. And in the work that I got to do at the chamber, I had many different positions. I kind of kept getting promoted. And so at one point I was the director of programs, and I wanted to start a women's program. This is before there was all these women's groups everywhere. This is like many years ago. And so I started this women's group, and then I started a young professionals group, and then I started doing these small group events for the executives and CEOs. And I was not an entrepreneur, but I learned, what do these people need and how can I develop programs that would help support them in their business and their growth? I learned a lot about networking and what that was like and how networking, I always say we are one idea or connection away from completely changing our life. And I learned that because of the people that I met through the Chamber of Commerce. And I was there for 8 years. So that had a huge influence on my work. And while I was there, I actually was also, I was doing all the program development and picking the speakers for our trustee level, which were all the CEOs and executives. And I came across this book, The Dream Manager, and I reached out to Matthew Kelly, who's the author, and I actually invited him to speak at the Chamber event. And this is like 12 years ago, 14, I don't even know. The time just flies. So he came and spoke. We connected. I stayed connected with him over the years. I had left the chamber. I went and became the director of marketing for the City of West Palm Beach Community Redevelopment Agency, where I continued to do work in community. And I got to meet really incredible merchants and business owners and provide a lot of programming for them, do a lot of marketing and outreach. And all the while, in the background, I'm still kind of connected to Matthew, and I'm also just so fascinated with marketing. You know, Scott, you and I, we met at Content Marketing World or Inbound or one of those, because I was really fascinated with when Facebook came out. I was like, oh, you can do these Facebook Lives and then LinkedIn and all these different platforms that we can leverage. And I was the girl in, I don't know, 2000 and maybe 9 or 10, who I had my little pink flip cam and I was like, let's record videos and get them out. And this is before this was a thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I did that. I really saw a need in the community for women and girls and self-improvement and self-esteem. And so I started a program for young girls called FAB, Female and Beautiful, to help them with their self-confidence. And so I say all this because although I always had a job that I really enjoyed, I also tapped into my creativity. I started creating videos on YouTube before it was a thing. I started a podcast for the chamber that I thought would be beneficial. And I just kind of played around in that space while I was working at these other organizations. And I'm very blessed because the organizations that I worked with, the leaders that I had, they really allowed me to be flexible. And I had a lot of autonomy in my roles. They were kind of like, oh my God, this girl, she just wants to do all of these things above and beyond what her role is. Get after it. And then I started a marketing company. So I had a boutique marketing company for a couple years where I was teaching people how to use social media and specifically live video to drive sales into their store. I worked with mostly local businesses, and so I did a lot of that work. And so there was this big mesh of like always like working, but also tapping into creativity. And my creativity shows up in ways that to most people seem like work, because I do enjoy videos and podcasts and writing and all that kind of stuff. And then after so many years of working and having the business, Matthew and I continued to reach out to Matthew. And then one day he's like, hey, let's get together. And now I get to run this man's company. And all that came from me meeting him years ago and staying connected with him and trying to support him. Like when I had a marketing company, I would reach out to him and ask him, why are you not on YouTube? You should be sharing your messages, because he is an incredible entrepreneur and author and writer. And he just published his 37th book.
Wow.
So I was like, why are you not? So I'm trying to push him to do marketing. And so I really just wanted to work with him and help him in his message. And he had other plans for me. And it was truly a life-changing opportunity and one that I am incredibly grateful for, because I just really appreciate the work that I get to do now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's astounding. And I think, quite frankly, Kate, what you've done is you have exemplified how a career trajectory is anything but a straight line these days. You know, you mentioned your dad before, having worked 40 plus years for the same company. That's unheard of today. And not only do people switch companies, but oftentimes they even switch industries. And to do so, I think people need to put themselves in a position like you have, where they're exposed to a lot of different people, a lot of different ideas, and then they can tap into their insights, their creativity, and start to explore. And it sounds like you have been fairly, let's say, fearless in your exploration. You know, not everything necessarily works, but you keep trying new things. How important is that mentality to you?
Oh my gosh. I love that. I mean, fearless is a great word. I oftentimes don't feel fearless, but I'm more, you know, I'm just so curious. I'm so curious about different. I mean, I look at the world today and I look at this younger generation. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the things that they are doing is just like incredible. You're able to, you know, start a business with like almost no money and do something online and create and really leverage your creativity to create a career that you really love. If you don't naturally, like for me, I was really lucky. I was naturally introduced to those people because I worked at a chamber of commerce. And then I've had to, over the years, really push myself to go to different networking events, to reach out to people in different worlds. You know, during the pandemic, I found the app Clubhouse, which some people may know about it. But it was an interesting app. At the time, it was blowing up because we were all stuck at home. And so I really gravitated towards, hey, who can I meet? And we were meeting people all over the world. You're in a room, quote unquote, a room, with people from Ireland and Italy and everywhere in the US. And we were all just having really interesting conversations. And we were able to pop into rooms. Like, I remember I popped into a room where all of these poets were sharing their poetry, and the power of that room. I was like, I mean, I never really explored poetry, and then listening to these people, like the spoken word poetry and how powerful it was. Oh my gosh, I got so curious about how are these people creating these words that are just like, I'm getting goosebumps listening to them, just the way that they decide how they're going to even read it, let alone, you know, when they had to first originally write it. And then a friend of mine that I met on the app, she encouraged me because I told her how impressed I was with her poetry and how inspiring it was to listen to. And she said, you should come to a poetry intensive, like a workshop that this man is putting on. And so this man that I'd never met, I connected with him on Instagram and he was doing this poetry workshop. And I reached out to him and I said, and he seemed like he was one of those guys that like seems super intimidating, not really smiling, but I reached out to him. He was the kindest person. And I said, I really love poetry. I write a little bit of it, but I am by no means an expert. And so I really don't want to bring down your group. It seems like you work with a lot of people that are way more experienced than me. He said, no, it's for everyone. And so talk about fear. I was so nervous to be part of this community, this group, because we had to share our work. It was a very small group. I think there was only like six of us. But I was so curious about how to become a better poet. And so I took this poetry workshop and I learned so much and I started writing poetry and I started getting feedback from these poets. And it was such an incredible experience. It enhanced my writing. When I was writing the book, Scott, if you would have told me I would be sharing my poems publicly like a couple years ago, I would have laughed in your face. Like, there is no way. These poems are for me and me only. No one is seeing them. And I actually made the decision. I'm like, look, I'm writing a book about living a creative life. One of my creative pursuits is poetry. I'm going to put some of my poems in my book. And so I actually included some poetry in my book because I, even though, again, I don't think I'm the best poet in the world, but I love it. I have so much fun with it. I'm exploring it. I'm trying to get better at it. It's something that brings me a lot of joy. And so, I think it's so important for us to discover things and to meet new people and to try things that we are scared of, to try things that we would really love to learn more about, but something is stopping us. Something is stopping us from potentially like digging a little bit deeper because, you know, we don't. Well, and then those are all the myths that I talk about in the book, right? Like the seven myths that stop us from exploring our passions. And so we got to get rid of those thoughts and really dig into to living a life that you're really fascinated by.
Yeah, and I want to explore some of those myths with you in a moment, Kate. But before I do that, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Since you mentioned poetry, would you be willing to share your favorite poem with us?
Oh, Scott, look at you. okay, so how about I would be willing to, well, when you say favorite, oh, when people say favorites, it always like stresses me out because I'm like, I don't have a favorite. But how about I will share a very short poem that I wrote that, how about that? I'll share like a very short, simple poem.
I am in your hands.
I am going to share. All right, so I have some longer poems that I wrote in the book, and so there are definitely other poems that I probably like more than this one. But this one I'm going to share with you. There's a fun reason behind why I'll share this, and hopefully it inspires your listeners to put themselves out there and try something new. So April is National Poetry Month. And there is a community that does like a poem a day. So in the month of April, you're supposed to do a poem a day. And they give you prompts for the poem. And like, you know, it could be a poem about love. It could be a poem about, I mean, it's not even only just themes, but they'll say, you know, write, pick a noun and a verb, and you know, it's like different things, like different prompts that you get to use. They're very creative in the prompts that you get to use. And so I started writing. I forget what the prompt was for this particular poem, but this is a poem that I have in my phone, so I just took it out. And this is one of the first poems that I wrote during National Poetry Month. And so it was another way for me to push myself out of my comfort zone because I was like, oh my gosh, writing one poem a day? I said, that's impossible. Who can write a poem a day? I thought, well, sounds like a challenge to me. So I went ahead and said, I'm going to write one poem every day in April. And the cool thing about that is they don't have to be good, right? Like if you know that you're right, like you don't have, I think that's what stops so many people like from doing creative work. We think it has to be really good. But if you have to write a poem every day, you know, some days they're probably not going to be that great. But other days they might be really, really great. And then some days you get to go back to a poem that you wrote and say, hey, there's something here that I can work with. And I'm actually going to workshop this and continue to play around with this and make it something even better. And so that's what I love about the creative process is that when we push ourselves to just create, even if it's horrible, even if it's bad, we get to, it gives us a place to start. And because there's something very debilitating about like a blank page or a blank canvas, we feel like we don't want to mess up. All right, so here's my poem, one of the first ones that I wrote. Okay. Looking for a love story like one found only in dreams. Dancing above the ocean, glitter falling out of stars, while an orchestra plays behind the moon, inviting us to sip from champagne waterfalls, flowing from song lyrics and poems from unknown artists, pulling me close, kisses tasting like cotton candy. His face is a shadow I've never seen, but have known forever.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing, Kate.
Well, thank you. I love that poem. I love the last line of that poem.
Yeah. I mean, Wow. I'm blown away. That is really good. So this idea of finding creativity, being inspired by something, it's easy, I think, well, for some of us, it's easy to be inspired. Just look around, quite frankly. But do you have advice for people who are stuck, who are, you know, maybe they don't know what their passions are, they don't know what inspires them? What kind of advice do you give them?
So I always think about how, you know, a lot of people that say, I don't really have any passions, but then you get them talking and they do, right? And so I ask a couple of questions. And the first one is, what did you enjoy doing as a kid? Like, right, like what were you naturally drawn to as a kid? Did you really love to play outside? Did you really love to paint and draw? Did you, like, what did you find yourself getting really, really interested in? Another question, because some people, that one for some are like, I don't know. I don't remember. So I say, okay, if I were going to give you $1,000 to learn something or explore something new, and you had to choose something, what would you decide to spend your time learning? And that, for people, they're like, oh, okay, you're actually going to pay me to learn something. Now they're like, okay, because that's another reason why I think so many of us don't pursue our creativity, because we think, oh, well, there's no point to it. It's not my job. It's not helping me in some way. So we don't invest our time into it. But if I was like, hey, I'm going to actually pay you to learn something, what would it be? And immediately people start saying, oh my gosh, I would love to learn a new language. I would love to learn how to play the piano. I would love to write a screenplay, right? Like, they start to come up with, oh, okay, there's actually things that I really would be interested in exploring. And then another question would be, if you had to spend an hour right now learning everything you could about one particular topic, what would that topic be? Or if you needed to write a paper on one topic, then what would it be? And immediately we start thinking about, oh, I would love to explore the universe or art or science or, you know, whatever those topics are for you. But most of the time, people, they are gravitated towards certain subjects or things that, again, it's part of their creativity. It might be completely separate from their job, but it's just something that they're not really working on. Is nothing that they're really exploring, because it's not top of mind, or it's not something that they feel like is going to help them in their career in any way.
Yeah. And a similar question I've heard from people regarding this is, if I asked you to stand up and speak on something extemporaneously for 10 minutes, what could you speak about?
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of times it's not their job. It's just something they have a passion about. There it is, whether it's model trains or, the history of, art in Eastern Europe or, whatever it happens to be. And you find that when pushed, people actually do have these passions. They just don't think of them. And as you say, they don't know how to tie it to work. And your book, Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. That's the key, right? How do we get people to start exploring things with an eye toward, well, how can I turn this into a second stream of income or potentially what I do full time? So help us unlock that secret.
I still think it's so funny that you had me read a poem.
It would have been a huge missed opportunity if I didn't ask you.
So the thing about what I'm so passionate about, and what I, if someone were to ask me, like, what could you get up and talk about? It's the creative process. And the creative process is alive and well in everything that we do, including our careers. And our creative pursuits, those passions, those things that we really find fascinating, those things that we really would love to potentially spend a little bit more time on, we give those things up when we start working. And we spend all of our time working. And we actually forget that our creative pursuits, they're not a nicety. Like, they're not like, oh, if you have time, you can pursue some of this stuff. No, they actually breathe life into your world. So when we make time for our creative pursuits, they help us become a better spouse, significant other, leader, friend, coworker, all of the different areas of our life, all of that joy that we get from our passions, they spill over into our lives. And that is kind of, to me, like, that's the quote unquote secret, right? Like, when we make time for those things. Now, for some people, those things could potentially turn into a business. And that's an amazing thing, right? Like, if you turn your passion into business and that's what you want, then that's awesome. I've also seen plenty of people who have tried to turn their passions into a business, and all of a sudden they realize, oh my gosh, I talk about this in the book. My friend Tommy, he's a woodworker. He loves creating beautiful things out of wood. And so his workshop is just his sanctuary. And then he started this business where he was selling all things that he made. And then all of a sudden, his passion, his time, his playtime of, I go in and I just like play my music really loud and I just work on what I want to work and I create what I want to create, turned into, oh my gosh, I have to figure out shipping and I have to have deadlines of people that are waiting for their, you know, their beautiful things that they've ordered. And he said, and it became a nightmare. So for him, he was like, I actually really love my job. Like, he works for a big company, he gets to do his work. And then at the end of the day, he gets to like go into his workshop and just play. And so he lost the play. Now, that's not everyone. Like, some people, they find the transition and it's great. But I like to share with people, don't feel like you have to turn your passion into your job. Like, you don't have to. Like, it serves a completely different purpose. In fact, I'll never forget, I think it was back in like 2004, and I was in the Entrepreneur magazine. It was the Entrepreneur of the Year award. And this guy got up and he was accepting the award, and he was sharing how one of the things that he made, it was mandatory for the people on his team, they had to have some type of hobby. And for them, they were selling like sporting equipment and stuff. So he said, and for them, it was like, you have to go surfing or kayaking, or like, it had to be something outdoorsy. And, but you, like, everyone on the team, it was a requirement that they spent some time doing some activity like that. Because he knew the secret. He knew that if my people are out and they're living and they're passionate and they're out in nature, then he knows that they're going to come back to work and they're going to have better ideas. They're going to have more collaboration with each other. They're going to come back feeling more energized and revitalized, and they're going to do their best work because of those creative pursuits. Like, that is what, when we work with leaders that believe that and care about their people in that way, those are the organizations that people want to work for. Yeah. Because they know, wow, my leader cares about me as a human being, as a person, and wants me to pursue this stuff. Another friend of mine, he has an incredibly successful business. They went from like zero to 75 million in like 5 years. It was nuts. And I got on a call with him, on a Zoom call with him one day, and one of his, like, I think this guy was like 27, one of his team members, and he said, hey, meet so-and-so. And I said, oh, hey, what's up? How are you? He said, oh, I got to tell you about, and he starts telling me about his Instagram page and how he's like a dating coach or something on the side. And he's sharing all this with me right in front of my friend. And my friend's like, yeah, isn't that so cool? And I'm like, how cool is this interaction that you are lifting this person up? He's got this little side hustle thing on the side. And my friend is like, yeah, absolutely. Because I know that if he's happier at home, he's going to be happier at work. And he is one of his top performers. So that is what I really love to see in the world, is like, when you're able to feed both sides, you're able to, obviously, if you need to go into work and do your best work, but you're only able to do your best work when you're becoming a better version of yourself overall, not just in the office, but when you're outside and you're exploring what you're curious about.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, as we talk about work-life balance, it's almost like there's this demarcation between the two. And that's not how we live our lives. I mean, we think about things in our personal lives while we're at the office. We think about work while we're outside of the office, and they flow together. And your mentality, your state of mind is affected one into the other. So it's just life. It's just who we are. And I love that that first example you gave about the sports equipment dealer, how there was a requirement. You must have fun. You must have a required hobby. What's interesting to me about that is so often you see leaders who are putting their teams together and go, well, let's go do a team building exercise. Let's all go, you know, bowling, or let's have a softball team, or, you know, whatever it is. And what you described allows the individuals to be themselves and to get the maximum enjoyment out of it. Now, that's not to say they won't go do team things, but it's less about forcing people to fit into a one-size-fits-few mentality versus allowing them to really pursue their passions themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you say that, because I just read an article this morning that was talking about how the millennials and Gen Zs are getting frustrated, or the leaders of the millennials are getting frustrated because no one is going to these team-oriented events that they're putting together. But the Gen Xers and Zs are like, you don't even ask our input of what we want to do. Like, you're setting up these things. It's not that we don't want to get together as a team. We would love that. It'd be so fun if we were actually doing something fun and not, you know, but going bowling or whatever it is that they're just not interested in. So to actually ask your team and then collectively come up with, all right, we're going to try this new thing, then you might see a little bit more engagement in your people. But also, it is still important. You have to let your people go do whatever it is that's important to them. And it probably includes their own friends and family. And we've got to make space for that.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, what your bosses recognized early on in your career, when you were looking to try new things and lead them down into social media and video and all the rest, they recognized they had somebody that was naturally curious, that had the drive, that wanted to try new things. Well, we all ought to be looking for those kinds of people in our employee base and give them the power to go do this stuff for us. So find the employee who's willing to plan that event and who can coordinate with his or her peers, right? So you empower them, and then you give them the ability to craft the program that resonates with them best, and everybody wins. So I want to talk a little bit about Floyd Consulting, this group that you lead. You and your team, as you say, are dedicated to helping individuals and organizations become better versions of themselves. And that's exactly what we try to do here in Timeless and Timely and on the Timeless Leadership Podcast. And the Dream Manager Program seems to fit exactly with your book in terms of doing what you love, you know, finding that dream. So talk a little bit about what the Dream Manager Program is and your role in bringing it to life.
Yeah, the Dream Manager is, so Matthew Kelly wrote the Dream Manager and published it in 2007. So it is a perennial seller, right? I mean, it's been in the market for so many years, and people are still discovering it and saying, oh my gosh, yes. How do I do this? How do I get a dream manager in my organization? And the program is, so we believe, our philosophy is that an organization can only become the best version of itself to the extent that your people are becoming better versions of themselves. And that is the only way to grow. And so how do we do that? And you hit the nail on the head, Scott, when you said, we don't have a work life and then a personal life. We have one life. Like, we're one in the same. And so we have to understand that as leaders, that when somebody is disengaged at work, it's probably because they're disengaged in their own life. Right? Like, they've kind of given up. Maybe they don't have a lot of hope. They don't really feel empowered. And so what a dream manager is the ultimate life coaching program. And so dream managers work within an organization, and they are the life coach for their people, for their team. And so we've developed this curriculum, and every time that one of the dreamers comes in for a session with their dream manager, they are not only talking about their dreams, Like, what are the dreams that you have for your life? We're helping them to re-engage in their dreams, their personal and professional dreams. And so the dream manager is there to support them in achieving those dreams. And we're also feeding them really great content every time that they meet with someone. So every session is different. So we talk about time and energy. We talk about the genius of your personality. We talk about, we talk about your personal development. We talk about like all the different areas of our life, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. We talk about relationships, how to have better relationships. And they're going through this curriculum with their dream manager, and they're getting activities and things that they need to be doing in between sessions that is helping them become a better version of themselves. And by doing that, oh my gosh, I can't even tell you. I can tell you story after story after story, but one of the comments that we get sometimes that is the most powerful and I feel like is so impactful is when a dream manager will say to us, one of my dreamers came to me and they're going through a lot, right? Like we've all experienced in a time maybe where, you know, things just keep going wrong. Someone gets sick in your family and then you're dealing with something where you get an unexpected bill or all the things that happen in life. And multiple dreamers have told their dream managers, I feel like so much is happening in my life right now. I feel so stressed. However, if it wasn't for this program, I don't think I'd be able to handle my life right now. Huh. Like, I don't think I would be able to be going through everything that I'm going through at all. And how powerful is that? Because when people are challenged at home, if they're getting divorced, if they have a sick parent or a sick child, or if they did get an unexpected bill from something that happened at their home, which these things happen, right? Well, they're stressed out. They don't come to work and you don't just leave that stress behind. You feel that stress. And so what more powerful way to help our people handle those things that come in life, not only personally, but now they're gonna come to work. They're gonna be more strategic. They're gonna think through things a lot differently. They're gonna take more ownership. They're gonna be more engaged. And so it's this beautiful program where you're not only helping people achieve these dreams that they have in their life, but now you're helping them truly become the best version of themselves in all of those different areas. And so it's so remarkable. And what's so cool is that so many people have stopped dreaming. Like they have stopped dreaming. They feel like they don't even have dreams in their life anymore. Wow. And so we start with this incredibly beautiful dreamstorming session. And we have all of these prompts that help people kind of rediscover their dreams. And in the book, Matthew shares, there's 12 different areas of dreams. There's physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, psychological, creative, professional. There's all these different areas. And so when you take those different areas and you start to put a few dreams into those lists, you start to recognize, wow, I do have a lot of dreams. And then we help people kind of pare down what is like the four dreams that I really want to focus on for this year. And when I tell you that there are dreamers that say, oh my gosh, I have been talking about doing this for years. And guess what? They actually accomplish it within 2 months, 6 months, wow, 12 months, just because they have a dream manager. That's not only there to hold them accountable, but they're also there to encourage them.
Yeah. Well, what I love about this concept is that you're talking about better versions of themselves. You're not trying to become, you know, the person who has written the book. You're not trying to become, say, John Maxwell or Seth Godin or, you know, whatever self-help guru you're trying to follow. You're trying to become the better version of you. And that's the best thing you can do, right? Rather than trying to approximate what somebody, you don't want to follow somebody else's dream. that's right. Kind of not the point. And to me, the way it's structured, and this sounds very similar to how I do my own coaching with clients, is it's almost like a corporate therapy session. You know, you're not a licensed therapist, but you're treating it in a way where you're dealing with everything that's within the person holistically, rather than just talking about, oh, what's your goals and you know, what are your deliverables this week, et cetera. So it's a more holistic approach.
Yeah. Yeah, and think about the level of trust that you gain from your team when you as a leader are saying, here, like, I care about you as a person. Like, I want you to be better. And not just for the sake of the business, but I want you to be a great version of yourself. There was one of our dream managers said, you know, when I look in the mirror, she said, I feel like I forgot who she was. And over the past 6 months, she goes, I remember exactly who she is. And you know what? I really love her. Like, oh, I was like, that's so beautiful.
You can't ask for anything more, right?
I know. Especially in this world of like comparison and feeling like, you know, a lot of times people feel like dreams mean I have to, like you said, I have to be the author. I have to author 10 books or it doesn't matter. Or I have to have $1 billion. Or we think it's these astronomical things, but most of the dreams that our dreamers have and the teams that we work with, the dreams are simple. The top dreams that we see are buying a home, getting out of debt is a big one because, you know, everyone wants to be financially free, and financially free does not mean you have to have $1 billion. Right. And losing weight. Everyone wants to like lose weight and feel or feel fit, some type of health goal. And one that's been a big one this year that's been awesome has been to develop a better relationship with their significant other. Yeah. So those are some of the dreams that people have been achieving. And so for some people, they think that's not a dream. No, that's a dream. Like, that's a beautiful dream. And again, there's all those different areas of dreams. And I think so often we are so focused on our professional dreams or our material dreams. But there's so many other dreams that we have. You know, some people, their dream is to develop a better spiritual practice or to live with more peace. Like, those are beautiful dreams. But if we're not intentional about putting some practices in place in order to achieve those things, then we are not likely to make those things happen.
Yeah. Well, great lessons to remember. The book is Do What You Love, A Guide to Living Your Creative Life Without Leaving Your Job. Kate Volman is the CEO of Floyd Consulting, where she oversees the Dream Manager program. Kate, you've got a newsletter, a YouTube channel. Where can people go to sign up for all of your inspiring and dream-worthy content?
the easiest way is to just go to katevolman.com. Like most of us, it's so easy to find everyone these days. I'm all over social media, but you can connect with me in all the different ways over on my website.
Fantastic. Well, Kate, thank you so much for being here on Timeless Leadership.
Thank you so much, Scott. It has been such a pleasure to chat with you, and I'm so grateful for you. And you got to be on my podcast, and then I got to be on yours. So this is a beautiful thing. So I'm glad that we've reconnected.
After that, I hope there's nothing holding you back from pursuing your passions and achieving your dreams. Because when you become a better version of yourself, you can then be in a position to help other people improve themselves. That's exactly what we mean when we say timeless leaders help others to learn more, dream more, do more, and become more. I'm Scott Monty. There's so much to learn,